circulated, the agenda was circulated with the agenda. And I'm wondering, I have no changes to that today. Are there any other changes to that agenda today? A motion to approve the agenda circulated would be in order. Moved by Councilor Fist, seconded by Councilor Muse. Any discussion? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you. We will now move on to 3.0 presentations. And under 3.1, we have Beverly Burlock today, who will give a presentation. And I would ask Beverly to come forward if you would.
Mr. Mayor, council members, I would like to express my appreciation for the opportunity to speak to you this morning. Since I returned home in 2001, I have become increasingly aware of how few people remain who knew or remembered my father, G.C. Soday, and I presume that might be true for some of the councilors as well. Upon my return, out of both interest and curiosity, I went to the museum to see what they had about him in their files. I discovered very little, and also to my horror, that the photo was not even of him. I completely understand why his paper, The Advance, like so many weeklies, was shut down recently. And actually, I was kind of relieved that it was finally put out of its misery from its long, drawn-out, lingering death. However, I was dismayed that there was nothing in the final edition about him except one mention in a cut line under a photo of the building. The Herald doesn't seem to know its own history anymore either, though basically they then owning the Advance, they gave him no recognition at the shutdown, yet in the mid-60s, the Herald both featured him on their front page celebrating his 51 years as a newspaper man and also promoted his name for the Senate. Unlike Roy Thompson, Rupert Murdoch, or even Graham Dennis, Cecil Day did not become rich. Everything was reinvested back into the business. Despite the fact that he would have gotten a much higher price, he was determined the paper would not be sold to a corporation. He wanted local personal investment, and tragically, that did not work out. He lived 8 years beyond his retirement at 70, and my mother, a fair bit younger, lived until 2004, a further 28 years. This was before CPP and pensions. And I tell you all this because I need to make it clear that contrary to what might be popular belief, I inherited nothing and have therefore nothing myself to contribute towards bequeathing any recognition for him. My point being, people should get the recognition they deserve regardless of wealth, like Henry Henze. We likely will never know how much Cecil contributed financially to things such as the hospital. However, there was no doubt that he always contributed substantial free publicity, free advertising, and free printing to the hospital, as well as to most other worthy causes. And he never blew his own horn. He could have turned tail and run in 1931. When he first saw the newspaper facilities in Liverpool, he'd risked all to come to. Since he'd already had considerable experience with several other more adequately housed and equipped papers around the province, it must have been quite a heart-stopping shock, that bare bones 18 by 24 barn behind the post office. But he stayed. In the early days, he used to go around on Fridays to collect at least partial bill payments so the staff could be paid. He not only promoted this town, county, and province, as well as every worthwhile cause, until the day he died, he also invested himself fully during the 45 years he lived here, as is abundantly obvious in the details in the biographical information that I hope you all received. And he succeeded against many obstacles, all odds. This, from the city of Paris, is but one of the many recognitions he received overseas, in addition to all the national and provincial news trophies. Yet sadly, at home, he wasn't always well treated. And it wasn't always easy being his daughter either, because I caught it at school from schoolmates echoing their parents' conversations after particularly challenging editorials. Nonetheless, he never refrained when he saw injustice or what he thought was important for discussion. Apparently, he himself would sometimes write letters to the editor and respond in order to get a conversation going. Mr. Day always had the first of things. While visiting one community, he was taking photos with his new Polaroid camera. Kids and adults flocked around to see this magic. At a party at the summer cottage, he once hid a tape recorder and then played back the conversations to great hilarity. First wiretape recorder they'd ever seen or heard. While visiting the Spring Hill editor, he got word of the terrible forest fire sweeping through Liverpool. We immediately left for home, not knowing what, if anything, we'd find left of home or the plant. I cannot imagine his heart and mind during that long, anxious drive. The logo on the paper and all business stationery was of the main office door with the slogan, "Open Door to Queens County." The advance office was the heart and hub of Liverpool's Main Street back then. Countless people were in and out daily, at all hours. Numerous community correspondents delivering their columns, people buying or renewing subscriptions, correcting addresses, bringing news information, wedding photos and write-ups, curious items, advertising copy, printing orders, needing office supplies. On Thursdays, there were lineups to buy the paper. And more often than not, people merely wanted to chat with Cecil, getting his opinion, to argue, or just seeing him as they passed the window, they'd come in and say hi. Anybody and everybody was equally welcomed. The plant behind the office was just as busy. Preparations for the Thursday paper run were ongoing, especially in those days when there were numerous steps and machines involved in the process. Anyone who was not dealt with separate pieces for each individual alphabet letter and its capital has no idea of the work involved in the setup of the printing, especially since all type is a mirror image and must be read backwards. And I just thought I would give you a quick thing. There was a skill, a craft, and an art in printing in those days. For anything that you read, the magic started with the linotype. An operator would sit at the keyboard, and with each letter and space that she typed, now these have been made into paper clips, so a little key like this would come down from this magazine up here and would arrive in a little compartment. And when enough of these were gathered to make up a line, then she would push a lever and they would go up somewhere to get connected with lead. And then the hot lead pieces for each line would come down and line up on the thing. And when there was enough of those, they were taken away. And then once it had been leaded, all those little keys would go magically up on a little chain at the top, and they would go clickety, 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 clickety back down into the magazine where they belonged. Now this one, it's on a thing of lead, but if you look at this sideways, you will see that each individual letter was glued on for that particular thing. You can just pass these around, and that is more properly. And then each page was laid out in scale on a piece of paper and then taken out back where the staff would then lay all this backward type into a bed, which was a metal frame that once everything was in, it was screwed really tight so when they picked it up, nothing would fall out. And of course, then there were the graphics. And first of all, we used to get every season, or well, before every season, a huge paper catalog of pictures of all the pictures that you might possibly need for the next little while. So then Cecil had to order what ones he guessed would be used, and then they came, and then they were made into what we'd call cuts. And some of them, I didn't bring it because it was too heavy, some of them were mounted on metal as well as, and in the old days, some of the bigger letters, like big capitals for Bold Heaven, they were hand carved out of wood and then mounted on those pieces of wood. And then once they got all the beds, then like a paint roller, somebody would roll ink on it, and then a piece of paper for a proof, it would go to the front office to be proofread. And I remember the day that we got this magic machine created from Germany, complete with a personal instructor, that if you took a photograph, because before that you couldn't do photographs, and put a couple of X's on the back for the darkest and a couple of circles for the whitest, and put it in the machine, sort of like the top of a photocopier, it would magically transform that into something so that we could then print photographs. And then the final magic was at the press, where all these pages were embedded in the press somewhere. At the end was this great, big, huge white roll of newspaper. It would go in and around and up, like, and come out the other end, all pages printed, all in the right order, folded. It was magic. And then, once the paper run was over, all of that had to be recycled. All the individual letters had to be put back in their right order in the proper files, and all the lead was melted down to be used for the next. It was magic, trust me, it was magic. Paper day was something else again. As paper poured from the huge press, many had to be gathered and tied in bundles for various outlets, while others were individually stamped for direct mailing, and then all sorted for the various mailing areas. Then all had to be delivered. And when all had finally stopped, the silence was deafening. In addition, there were four other smaller presses going almost constantly to produce all the printing orders, which were essential for keeping the paper afloat, plus folding, collating, stapling, packaging, never mind dealing with all the graphics and the photos. I don't know how many miles I walked around big tables like that over there collecting stuff. I don't think people generally realize what they've lost when the weekly community newspapers have been shut down. Citizens, we here, lost a voice for our sharing and receiving local news, events, and meetings. For providing important information, especially actions and decisions by all levels of government, as well as a voice for citizen complaints and concerns. Even further though, citizens, we, have also lost a voice promoting and defending our area, a voice speaking out for us, up for us, and out for us. At one time, all government levels took very seriously the voice of the people that they got through community newspapers, from the news, the letters, and the editorials. If a community newspaper got behind an issue, that was a voice, a strength, and a power to be reckoned with. The Advance stood up for people with municipal government, for the people, town, and country, county, with both provincial and federal governments. I'm sorry, but online papers and social media just don't cut it. They don't have the same impact. Maybe with corporations when people best know how to use it, like United Breaks guitars, but that's very rare. In 1976, Cecil was honorary chair of the 57th CWNA convention. After 61 years as a newsman, he was awarded the Sidney R. Stone Trophy, only the seventh time in the CWNA history that that trophy had been awarded. He died a week later on August the 21st at 78 in the Advance's 99th year. The trophy inscription said it was awarded in recognition of the meritorious achievement in the service of their fellow man and their community, with great appreciation for their ceaseless effort and personal sacrifice. I find it especially sad that though he was so regarded and honored by his national peers, he has never received any such recognition in what he made his beloved hometown, where he invested his all. I'm not sure whether the region has a policy for such recognitions, so I would respectfully request this become a project. From its report, I'd appreciate being informed of the various options possible, the criteria and procedures required. There are many other contributors to our history who've been similarly forgotten or were never even known in quotes. I think especially of the four elderly single women who were benefactors and supporters of my father, and who knows what or who else. I mean, seriously, do we even know what they did? Miss Mary Farrell, Miss Janet Mullins, the woman who lived in Chestnut Hall across from the Advance, and the woman who lived in the unique house at the corner of Beener and Church Streets. Sadly, I don't recall those last two names, but I was sent to all four homes on numerous occasions to deliver and pick up. Many other immigrants also contributed greatly to Liverpool and area, families such as the Saps, the Siemens, and the Wongs. Researching and writing up the stories of our lost historical citizens could become an annual history project for high school students, requiring a bit more than Google. It could be a competition with prizes, including the completed reports being preserved in our museum. And I was going to say, as well as the winning ones being published in the Advance, but, well, I trust both these ideas will be given serious priority consideration. Thank you for your time. And before I go, thanks to the graciousness of the new building owner, there will be an unveiling of a personal plaque at the building on September the 18th at 4 p.m. to which you are all, I'll leave that there so you can see who gets it, right?
Thank you.
And I did not forget you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Beverly.
Thank you very much.
Beverly, if I may ask, do you have any suggestions of what you feel may be a fitting tribute to Cecil Day that the region may consider?
Well, I didn't want to impose. Oh, and I want to collect my treasures before I go. To be perfectly honest, what's now called Henry Hensley Drive should really have been called Cecil Day Drive, because he advocated for that to be filled in with to provide a road for years and years and years. So I don't know. A portion of the museum, which he also advocated for and asked that requests at his funeral be sent for. I'm not making any great suggestions, but I would like to be consulted before you pick something. Or before you definitely pick something.
And that's very reasonable, but I thought I would ask today in case you had any thoughts that were prominent in your mind. I would like at this time to ask councils if they have any questions or comments on your presentation. Deputy Mayor McClatt?
Beverly, I'm sitting here and I just want to clap for your presentation because I think it was amazing.
Thank you.
familiar with, because Vino's Print has some of that equipment and all of the Ludlows and all the equipment. And I kept, when you were
and
talking
there,
about
and
that,
there's
my
some
head
magic
was
in the computer, but in the computer, you see, what you see is what you get. You don't have to know how to read backwards and upside down.
And I understand your mom was the one that did a lot of the proofreading.
Yes. Yep. And I'm pretty darn good too. I see a lot of errors in even novels these days. Honest to Pete, I don't think they have proofreaders anymore.
But keep in touch with me because I can kind of help you research some of your members.
Councilor Fancy?
Let's stay right there. We'll still be talking with you. we're not going to let you go just yet.
Oh, okay. You better watch out. I keep going forever.
really, really enjoyed your presentation. And you know, there's so much of what you're saying there, the history that we lose, the history that we didn't have. You know, like you said a lot of things I never knew. I've heard of your father's name, but that's all it's ever been, just a name. And I think the other things that we've talked about of people here that have put out their lifetimes into this town, that will another 20 years, 30 years, it'll be a history that will be lost and forgotten. And I remember growing up, I grew up in Caledonia, and it was always the little local things of who was over to whose place and playing bridge and everything else. It was always the community things of use. We lost that. We've lost the community. What I do appreciate still at North Queens, they still have their paper they put out. I think it's quarterly. So they've still got some, and I think people go for that. They want to know what's going on in the community, and we're losing our community pride and community spirit things in that area. So
but even more so, we've lost the power that the community newspaper had. And that power was for the citizens, and the citizens have now lost that power, and I don't think a lot of us know what's gone.
So having a paper done down in Bridgewater, you aren't going to have a lot. It's going to be hit the highlights.
Well, and that's another county.
Yeah.
I mean, I contacted them about the unveiling, and well, that's in Queens County.
Any other councilor? Beverly, my father worked at the Advance in the 1940s, and through that relationship, of course, I knew Cecil and was very amazed at the effort that he did put into the newspaper and very thankful that he did. We will certainly have a discussion through council as to where this may proceed going forward, and we will keep you in that loop.
Okay.
And I do thank you very much for your presentation today.
And I would encourage you to not just think of Cecil, but also of other people who also deserve recognition. Like that Siemens store side by side. That was a big store for this town at that time. And besides, they won us a lot of Liverpool Arab trophies. Oh, I remember one summer, there was a woman who worked in the front office for the summer, and she was dating a ball player. And one Thursday, they ran off, because you have to run off a fuse, and then it's checked, papers, and it's checked before everything goes. And they ran off a few with the headline, Liverpool last lands Larriper. I thought she was going to have a conniption fit.
Our next presentation under 3.2 is the Aquatic Society. Celeste Johnson is here today, and a number of the Aquatic Society. And I would ask Celeste and whoever is going to accompany you to come forward.
Would you want to stand, Celeste? You want to use this?
Slide, I guess, and just from the beginning. So, Mr. Mayor, councilors, thank you for giving us the opportunity to report back to you on the things that have happened since the last time we were here. Just a quick background on the society. We formed 3 years ago. Our goal was to see that a year-round pool be built in Queens. We did conduct a survey of close to 1,000 residents. 90% of them wanted a pool, although money has always been and will continue to be an issue. We had presentations from five companies who were, we put out a request for interest about who would be interested in building a pool, and five companies did come and present to us, and so we have an idea of who would fit best. We already know that. We've created social media outreach, and we had a presence at Privateer Days. More recently, we asked and did receive funding, thank you very much, both from the region and from the province, for a study for aquatic from the Bill Burke and Catherine Oliver for to do a study, a feasibility study, for the to have a year-round pool. And it was important that someone who was not biased would do this study, someone who was from the province but not from here and didn't have it, had no vested interest in the study, in the results. So they addressed two questions. One, what type of facility would suit the region, and to identify the magnitude of the cost of such a facility. They proposed a four-lane, 25-meter lap pool. We had sort of hoped for a six-lane pool, but based on their estimates of cost and population and whatnot, they suggested a four-lane pool. As it turns out, there's not room for a footprint of a six-lane pool now with the new store across the road from Queen's Place. This would include a, so there's to be the aquatic center would include a lap pool, a shallow teaching or lounging pool, could be used as a therapy pool, a large slide, which always attracts a lot of people, a waterfall, which feels good to sit under it, but it's also really good for certain neurological and psychological conditions. People enjoy benefit from that. They proposed that the construction would be approximately $10 million, and that this was based on a $600 per square foot estimate, and that the operating cost would be between $140,000 and $185,000 a year. So that's, now some of these numbers that they came up with about the users and the costs and what became, they compared, and this is in the long report that you have, they compared similar populations that had pools, Dalhousie, New Brunswick, and Stephenville, Newfoundland. So those are similar populations, and that was partly where they came up with the usage and the cost. And then their summary was that there are challenging demographics and economy in this region. And so then they compared these two places. They found in those two places that an aquatic center was an asset to a small community, and that it was a particularly good investment of public funds. The major thing about the pool, an indoor pool, is that it accommodates a wide range of ages and abilities, from babies and drown-proofing young children, developing teams and abilities in younger children, school-age children, high school children, leadership and lifeguard training and those kinds of things, as well as, of course, into the adult area, keeping fit and keeping seniors mobile and functional. A modern pool would help support also the Relocate to Queens initiative. We know anecdotally of people who have decided to locate in the South Shore of Nova Scotia, but not here because there's not a pool. So the good news, they answered these questions in an unbiased manner. However, the costs they provided were estimates. And so we really didn't have, they didn't have the details. This was a global kind of thing. And that's what we asked them for. So just, and I apologize for the you getting these slides just today, because we only got the information at the end of last week from MJMA. Now, MJMA is a company, they were the architectural company. They were originally part of Architect 49, and they know Queens Place Amera Center. They were involved in the building of that. They even have the plans from the original building, et cetera. They came out of Architect 49. They're on their own now. And they are currently building the aquatic facility in East Hants. That's I believe, a $17 million facility in East Hants that they're working on. Their estimate for us now is $12 to $13 million. So I just want to say, every bit of time that we wait, the price is going up. So that's just a given. So what I think the next steps that we think are needed is a commitment from the region. We're assuming a third, a third, a third from governments. So a commitment from the region for a commitment of $4 million for the construction of the pool. This would obviously require a tax increase, something that we had always hoped when we first started with the bubble that was going to be $5 million, we hoped would be avoided. But with looking at costs of $12 million, it isn't going to happen any other way. So assuming there's a commitment, then there would be a call for tenders, decision made regarding a contract. I suspect, based on the five companies that came in before, even if all five don't come back in, I still expect that I would be surprised, we would be surprised if you went with somebody other than MJMA, but that would be, see what comes in. Then once that, once we've gotten those steps, a commitment, call for tenders, then we can approach the federal provincial government for $4 million each. It doesn't mean, and so the cost of doing the planning in the proposal is incorporated into the cost of the building. So if it costs them $100,000 to do a detailed, you know, plumbing, electricals, everything kind of plan, that's part of the cost of the construction. Then what we would do corporate and private fundraising to support the operating cost. And so that probably would need a fund of about $3 million. And that's what we had always said we would do. So the society is ready to do the footwork. We're ready to meet with governments, knock on door. We've met with governments, except that we didn't have, and they all come back and say, and we've mentioned to private citizens, and they all say, well, when you have commitment from the region, then we'll talk to you more seriously. Like, they're not going to talk to us about any details unless they know that there is a commitment from the region to go forward with this. Just to say, we've been ready for the past 3 years to do this work, and mentioned that we're the third group over 20 years to work on having a pool. We need a commitment from the region that this is high on the list of priorities for Queens, and essentially we don't move forward without it. So that's our bottom line. Thank you. And this is a picture of where it would look stuck out on the side. That's what it would look like.
Thank you, Celeste. Any questions or comments of counselors today? Counselor Kelly.
Hi, Celeste. And, you know, I applaud your commitment and your group's commitment to pushing this forward. And it's a big commitment, a big ask. I think it's really, as our community goes, we have everything pretty much, you know, that would really be the icing on the cake for our community. But as we all know, everybody wants one, but nobody wants to pay for one. And it is a huge, huge, commitment money-wise. Would you say that a four-lane pool would be enough to attract swim meets and be a service to the community when it comes to, say, our dam busters and their swim meets and promoting being able to have events here that the public could go watch these swim meets and whatnot?
No, I wouldn't.
Oh, okay.
Two reasons for that. One, you need 6 lanes to hold an official meet.
Right.
You need both 6 lanes and deck space for the teams and the coaches and whatnot. The second thing is swim meets don't make money. Even if people come, the community might
yes.
get some money and
yeah.
from people going to things, but it's not like holding an entertainment event
right.
Like that. We could have fun meets where you invite one team, invitational meets. It's not an open part of Swim Nova Scotia meet. And Swim Nova Scotia had been in communication with us, and they were very sorry that we didn't get a 6-lane pool, because then we could have hosted meets. There are no indoor 6-lane pools that can host meets. Well, Bridgewater could, and it actually is 25 meters. There was a rumor that went around. And it really is 25 meters, and they could hold a meet. Their problem is the deck space, and people would have to be in the hallway looking through the window to watch the meets.
Right.
Yeah. So it wouldn't, one of the things that we had heard from one of the groups that presented was a climbing wall. And the climbing wall, there's not a climbing wall in Eastern Canada. And that would be a draw, like in the sense that the skate park comes. So people would pay to come. I think particularly weekends and kids, you would have people coming for a climbing wall. And even the slide.
I've seen, it's a shame, I've seen the dam busters at their meets. I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds. I was blown away by how many kids are involved in swimming and how many kids and families go to these meets and swarm, pretty much take over
right.
Lunenburg or Bridgewater, wherever they
right.
are.
Right. And when the Dam Busters practiced at LCLC this year, and I drove them and could see, the pool was packed,
yeah.
absolutely packed. And the little kids' pool was packed with swimming lessons, like 3 different groups of swimming lessons, and 2 lanes were
yeah.
taken up with kids swimming, and the Dam Busters had paid a lot of money to rent 2 lanes. There was 1 lane left for anybody else who wanted to do laps.
Yeah.
So it was packed.
My other question is, if I may, when you say that there's funding available from provincial and federal government, and you've already talked to them, and I know they'll say without the commitment they won't discuss it, but do you know for a fact that there are programs which they can actually fund that? If we did give commitment and you talked to them, would they then say, we don't have anything to give, there's no program that would do that, but there is money available?
There are monies available. We had originally hoped that the infrastructure money would be the place that we would find funds, but that is allocated for other things. And Queen's portion, were Queen's to get their portion, assuming, has already been committed.
Right.
But there are other funds, particularly in terms of health and education and small communities. So there are funds. I know less about the provincial situation, but except that they have funded other places for recreational things. So I know that there is a recreation budget. And we're not talking, 4 million today. We're talking over time. This could be like over 5 years.
Right.
So it's, I think that it's an issue that I can't say for sure. I can't say for sure, but we won't even know for sure, yes or no, until we have commitment from here. And commitment from here doesn't then mean that it will actually happen.
Yes.
But we're stymied without it.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Johnson?
Thank you for the update, because I know I was, a lot of the committees I sit on, it's a topic every time, where's the pool and where's the region at with the pool and things like that, so I appreciate the update. One of the things that you had on your slide that I'm not clear on, you had suggested a 2% tax increase over a period of 4 years. And the way I do the math, is that 2 cents for 4 years consecutive increase on taxes, or just
yes.
2 cents this year, and for 4 years it would be paid for? That math
no,
doesn't work for
2 cents a year.
Per 2 cents a year for 4 years,
right.
which would be an 8-cent increase
over
4 years.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Counselor, Counselor Mewes.
The one thing I see here, the 140 to 185,000 annual operating costs based on 1,000 users. In reality, do you think we're going to get 1,000 users through the poll with 10,000 people in Queens County?
Well, that estimate came from Dalhousie, New Brunswick, and Stephenville. They have actually smaller populations than we do in Liverpool. So that's an estimate.
Yeah.
I just say that, you know, so I go to LCLC at 1 o'clock, between 1 and 2 in the afternoon, and there's hardly anybody there. And I know a few other people that go in there and say, nobody uses this pool. Well, you go at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, or you go at 8 o'clock in the morning, and in the mornings they have aquafit classes, they have lap swimmers, they have adult learn to swim. I mean, it's a busy pool. And we visited that pool and talked with the manager, they have some financial issues, but it's not as bad as they had thought it would be. And they also had, interestingly, of course, they didn't share the name. There were two corporations that wanted to have naming rights on it, which would be, you know, we're probably talking 7-figure amount of money for the naming rights. But that pool is between two municipalities, and so there's some legal work that is not allowing them to give that name yet.
Does the Aquatic Society have any money at all?
No.
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 Well, wasn't that set up years ago when there was money put into it?
Then we got the $6,000 for
No,
the
no,
study.
I know that, but I thought years ago this was set up, like when the pool was first talked about, and it was a pool committee set up. No?
We don't have any money, no. The treasurer can tell you our balance is what, 60 cents or something.
Deputy Mayor McLeod?
Thank you again for your presentation. When you talk about a third, is the municipality, and maybe Chris could answer this, are we able to acquire additional funds for our third, or does that always have to come from our own fund resources? Could we, you know, for example, if there was an endowment or a foundation or whatever that could support it, that could be included in our third portion? It can be. It doesn't always have to be raised through our own finances. And also the size, the 4-lane. Now, those standards are set by Swim Nova Scotia or whatever. Have they ever gone outside the realms of the 4 versus 8? So, and then held events, because, you know, you have to look at today's situations. And it's the same with any other sport, Nova Scotia associations like skating and that. There could be suggestions that they kind of change those rules.
Yes.
So that we could accommodate those.
And and they are open. I have conversations with the head of Swim Nova Scotia, Betty El Hawari, about a couple of things. The Dam Busters has been having conversations with her about how many hours a week in winter coaching you can have and still compete in summer coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And they are open to having discussions about that. And so I had said maybe we could be open to having discussions about official meets. But maybe you know that from Swim Nova Scotia gets its rules from Swim Canada, right? Like, don't they come from, and that's from FINA, which is international competition. So it isn't just Swim Nova Scotia that's coming up with this. It's they're part of two umbrella organizations, the national one and an international one.
But smaller communities certainly don't have the capacity.
No.
And
no.
I think, you know, we're talking about rural lifestyles,
yes,
and that,
yes,
sort of thing.
Yes.
And even the provincial and federal governments should take the, you know.
Right.
I know that there's funding out there somewhere under accessibility and fitness and all that stuff.
Yes.
And
yes,
they're coming up more and more with the lifestyle changes in communities. So
right,
hopefully it'll be something that will open up.
Well, we would certainly have ongoing discussions with them. The you know, there isn't the space to have a big meet. Heather's been to these meets where there are 25 heats of 6 lanes of 10-year-old kids doing, you know, an event. So, but the thing that, and so we couldn't do that, but the thing is the kids can't get official times.
Yeah.
when it's not an official meet. So they can't move out of participation where they don't like get put by time. So they can move out of participation to age group swimming, and the age group swimmers can't set records or get official times for their events. I think that's something we could work on with Swim Nova Scotia, and we wouldn't be the only ones. We would not be the only one, group asking for changes. So, and they're, she's open to discussion about it and seeing what can be done, certainly for provincial times. Maybe if some kid sets a national record, it might not count, but unless they went to a national meet.
Councilor Chris?
Thank you for the presentation, I really enjoyed it. The survey, 1,000 residents at 90%, where was that survey? Was it conducted through the whole region?
Yes.
Right from North Queen,
but
right
we,
around?
Yes,
all the
we
region?
Put we put questionnaires in North, we put questionnaires out in North Queen. Sue isn't here. Sue delivered questionnaires to North Queen.
So did they go to the households?
No. They were put in the post office and in like grocery store, you know, handy stores and things like that. It was also online. But the thing we don't know, and this is, I mean, your question is excellent. The thing that we neglected to ask and we do not know is where the responses came from. What part of the region, when every one of these 1,000 people who responded, we don't know where they lived.
Yeah. And one more thing, as we're speaking, the cost of running the operational cost, is that include the staff being paid?
Yes.
It just seems like a very low figure to me.
Well, that's because there's going to be some income. This isn't the operating cost. This is the operating cost after the income from using the pool has been used. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, that's operating loss then.
Yes. What actually has to be paid out.
Councilor Fancy?
Yes, Celeste. Again, I'm so glad it's finally coming here, so we need to make a decision where we're going, and that's the whole thing, because it's going on too long, just saying, kind of laying dormant, going, instead of, are we going to be fully committed into this or not? And that's, so along with that, I have to ask other questions, to collect it all together, because I look at Milton Pool in particular. Milton Pool is not in good shape. This is simple. We could say we get 10 years. We're not going to get 10 years of Milton Pool. It's going to be a lot less than that. So the dam busters are definitely affected by what we're going to do. And personally, myself, I don't want to see us without a water access for these kids in particular. So that's just one avenue of it, right? I know we met before with the COA, and the COA direction is different at this particular time, because they keep changing their direction. But, a few years ago they were big into this, now they're into other avenues, but now they can come back around again because they change all the time and what they're going to do. We're going to be looking at this saying, are we going to be committed to $4 million going forward of saying we will say we will be doing this on the region's behalf, saying that we're willing to go forward with this. Or if we look, again, this is just talk, we got to talk about everything when we talk about it, is what if we looked at phases as a thing, like I said, of putting an outdoor pool in with wall structure with handle and an indoor pool, and then go along as phases. Would that be something that you'd be interested in? I mean, because when we go to discussion, we're going to discuss everything.
Yeah.
Because maybe the outdoor pool could be $3 million, and it's something that could be achievable at this particular time, or maybe we go with the whole gusto, but at least to give us some options of how you would think about all these things.
So you're saying an outdoor pool first and then enclose it later? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that with wall structures that could take on a indoor pool, have it so it could not just like a outdoor dig a hole, stick it in here, so you never ever could have an indoor pool.
Right.
It would have to be structured. Just something would you be interested in being part of? I'm just something to think about.
Yeah, I don't have any idea. Do you know, Deb, if there are?
I don't know if I can ask that either, because any foundation work would have to be done probably at the same time.
Absolutely.
The basin was put in, So whether, I don't know, because when you put foundation, then you have rebar sticking up, and so I'm not sure that you can separate the two.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much more the roof would be versus the pool with the walls. I mean, I don't know. It's a question that we could ask some of the MJMA.
Right.
Yeah, we could ask, but.
Because I asked our engineering staff at Riverfront just to say,
yeah,
what could that be done at that time? So if something happened, it's all of a sudden it came back that we didn't want to go forward with the $4 million. I'm just saying, don't know whatever, that we could say, hey, we could do this, and then we could be able to do that in the as a future thing, that we don't lose the capability of going forward.
Okay. Well, that's a question to ask in the request for proposals.
Right. I just putting it out there just in case. You know, if we go forward with the whole thing, that's fine. But if we don't, then is there another option that there could be something?
The other thing I just want to say, like I mentioned earlier, is every bit of time that is postponed.
But the other part of that is it's saying that I'm looking at the other end too, with the Milton's pool.
Yeah.
If all of a sudden we come back with a no, and all of a sudden we're back to nowhere, you know what I'm saying? Well, then that's not good.
No.
So, but
the
if
Milton
we come
pool
back
is like
and say we could come back with the $4 million, or I mean the $4 million of our behalf, or we go with this here, that we could at least have something going forward in the future. Which either way we go,
it's going to cost.
I like to have something going.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I'm saying. I want to make sure that we're not just going to be 2 years' time, the pool collapses in Milton, and we're no further hit than we're today, just sitting here talking.
Yeah.
Councilor Fisk? I just want you to know, and everybody in this room to know, I'm all for putting a pool in under the conditions that we can afford the numbers. That's very important to my way of looking at this. And if we can't afford it, we shouldn't venture. But Councillor Fancy has got a good thought there. So we should think a little bit both ways there and make things happen. So that's my thoughts. I'm all for a pool, as long as we can afford the pool.
Right.
Any other councillor have a question or comment? Councillor Crowley?
Just one thing I'd like you to clarify. You had mentioned originally you were looking at a 6-lane, and then the building Dollarama has changed that. Is it because of that, or is it cost, or a combination?
Well, Burke and Oliver said that they didn't think we could afford a 6-lane pool.
Right.
Because the difference is the volume of water, as well as the size of the building. And so they said, you probably cannot afford a 6-lane pool, but you probably can afford a 4-lane pool. And so that was their reason. And then in the meantime, Dollarama went up, and that meant that the road can't move, and there isn't the footprint anymore, even if we supposedly, you know, I won the lotto of $10 million and said, have a pool. I couldn't do it.
So the original plan was to have to move the road.
That's right. To have 6 lanes, we had to move the road.
I remember conversation.
Yes. So it, but even without thinking about moving the road, they said, just in terms of the amount that it would be used and how much it cost with that much greater volume of water and the building of it, that they did not suggest that as an option.
Thank you.
Any other councillor have a question or comment? Councillor Kelly?
Just a quick one. When you said that there's a project going on in Hans County right now, what
East
are they building?
They're building an aquatic center.
But is that a 6-lane pool?
I think it's 6 lanes, yes.
Okay.
Sue, Deb, did you know?
It also is a bigger footprint, not just because of 6 lanes, but they have other things involved that they already have in place.
Yeah.
And there's a certain $2 million, but they don't have parking lots. They don't have, you know, they don't have a lot of what we already have. And that cost of 12 to 13 million is the soft cost too included. It's 10 million for the hard cost. The rest is the soft cost. So it's pretty detailed
Because, I mean, they, as I said, I think that's a really good estimate and the difference there, because we have a parking lot and there's already three walls, and so, I mean, sorry, there's one wall, so you're talking about building three walls, and they know the design, they know the place, so, and they're building one right now, so they're pretty much current about the cost of building one and also knowing Queen's Place.
One more question about the report. Was the committee happy with the report? Was it things that you, everything you expected, or was there pieces missing that you really wished had been addressed?
Well, given how much they were paid and what we asked them to do, we were satisfied with the report. We would have liked more detail, but that's not what we didn't ask for the details, and so we didn't get the details.
Detail and
well, details in breakdown. How much would the structure, like, how much is it costing? What is breaking down the cost? Where are the costs coming from?
Right.
So they said generally this is based on $600 a square foot. So that's a, I mean, that's an estimate, $600 a square foot. And they didn't say, well, it's three walls and not four walls, and they didn't say it's glass or it's solar or it's whatever. We didn't get those kind of details, but we were not asking for that. We were asking for a feasibility. Can this community afford a pool?
Mm-hmm.
And could it use a pool? Would it be benefit to the community to have a pool? That's what we asked,
right.
And that they did answer. And especially, I like the comparison with similar populations. That's right.
When we're looking at the, you know, age-friendly community strategies and things like that, it fits in the footprint.
That's right. So this is
Biscuits, but it's the operating loss that gives me a little bit of discomfort.
So I don't know how to go back. This is the back. These are. I had an additional slide. If I know how to go back here, this is not.
Just the up-down part.
On the right? Oh, yes, okay. It's not doing anything. The arrows. I had a slide, all the conditions. I went to the medical literature, the reviews of things, and found that conditions like certainly arthritis, lung conditions, COPD, chronic fatigue syndrome, et cetera. There are data, there are studies that show that you're keeping people mobile, you're keeping them out of hospital, out of emergency room visits and stuff like that with COPD and asthma. All those many, many conditions that are, a lot of them across age groups, congestive heart failure, all those kinds of things that people benefit from being in the water, the hydrostatic pressure, et cetera, et cetera.
Celeste, from memory, I do believe that going from a four-lane pool to a six-lane pool was estimated at $2 million more.
Yes, is that right? Deb, do we have an estimate?
I don't know that.
Pardon?
I don't know that.
Okay.
It sounds low to me, but I don't remember that.
The second question I have, in your deliberations in the society, did you give any consideration as to whether there would be an impact for the Milton Pool, the North Queens Pool, or how those fit into the swimming world of the new pool that you're proposing?
Right. Mostly we did think about the Milton Pool, and the Milton Pool we see is kind of moribund on its way out. Megan can tell you how many days this year they had to shut it down, and the amount of money. Well, I mean, people like outdoor pools, so if the some investment to keep it just functional, but how it was shut down, what, 7 days this summer?
I have to go back.
Yeah, but many days that kids miss swimming lessons and swimming practice and stuff like that. So it is limited to how many days a year. And so the cost of fixing that up, and how many days a year would it be used? So I don't see it as being a necessity to keep an outdoor pool, and I don't know, I think for the North Queens Pool, I don't know enough about that program. We have not talked about that very much. I do know that for people, I think the drive to LCLC or into Queens is not terribly different for people in that region. And, so.
Well, thank you. Councilor Fancy?
I see one point you both really made, which really, I like this, that the difference between what LCLC is, which is it's really a setup for lap swimming and things like that, where you'd have a low end, high end. When you say about people where they come from, you say 10,000 people but versus 1,000 that could be coming. It wouldn't all come from there. It could be people come from Bridgewater and such as, oh, because they have kids who will swim in the low, on the shallow end where you have, it's a different type of
yes.
of setup
yes.
as far as personnel of what you could attract.
Yes.
I like that end.
And I mean, it's a visible, where Queens Place is a much more accessible and visible place than LCLC.
Mm.
Yeah.
Any other comments or questions of councilors? Celeste, I want to thank you and the committee for appearing today and doing the presentation. Of course, our job now will be as council and staff to review what you've presented, arrive at some decision to move forward. We'll be working closely with you in that regard.
Well, thank you. And just remember, we will work very hard with you if you decide to go forward.
Thank you very much.